Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form, text number 35.
Etat chata bhagavato
deva karmatma rupinam
kashaldayad upakaratam yogamaya balodayam.
This Kshataha Avadura Bhagavata of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Deva Karma Atma Rupina, of the gigantic form of transcendental work, time and nature. Kaha, who else? Shadajat can aspire, upakatam, measure in totality, yogamaya, internal potency, bala udayaham, manifested by the strength of. Translation. Avadura, who can estimate or measure the transcendental time, work, and potency of the gigantic form manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The froggish philosophers may go on with their mental speculations on the subject matter of the Virat, the gigantic form exhibited by the Yogamaya, internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but factually, no one can measure such a vast exhibition. In Bhagavad Gita 11.16, Arjuna, the recognized devotee of the Lord, says, Aneka bahudara vyaktra necham pashyamitam sarvato nantarupam nantam na majam na punastaladim pashyami visveshvara visvarupa. O my Lord, O gigantic visvarupa form, O master of the universe, I see innumerable hands, bodies, mouths and eyes in all directions, and they are unlimited. I cannot find the end of this manifestation, nor do I see the middle, nor the beginning. Bhagavad Gita was specifically spoken to Arjuna, and the Vishvarupa was exhibited before him at his request. He was awarded the specific eyes to see this Vishvarupa, yet although he was able to see the Lord's innumerable hands and mouths, he was unable to see him completely. Since Arjuna was unable to estimate the length and breadth of the potency of the Lord, who else would be able to do so? One may only indulge in miscalculation like the frog philosopher. The frog philosopher wanted to estimate the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean by his experience of a well 3 cubic feet large. And thus he began to puff himself up to become as big as the Pacific Ocean. But at last he burst and died by his process. This story is applicable to the mental philosophers who, under the illusion of the Lord's external energy, indulge in estimating the length and breadth of the Supreme Lord. The best path is to become a cool-headed, submissive devotee of the Lord. Try to hear about the Lord from the bona fide spiritual master, and thus serve the Lord in transcendental loving service, as suggested in the previous verse. instructions. I'll just read that last sentence that Prabhupada delivers. That beautiful statement of instruction. The best path is to become a cool-headed, submissive devotee of the Lord. Try to hear about the Lord from a bona fide spiritual master, and thus serve the Lord in transcendental loving service as suggested in the previous verse. Read the translation again. O Vidura, who can estimate or measure the transcendental time, work and potency of the gigantic form manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So this Srila Prabhupada here describing how we can understand these very difficult to understand features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his different potencies. Today, of course, is also the disappearance day of Srila Ramanujacharya. So, we will try to pay a little homage to our great Vaishnava Acharya as we will try to insert a few gems from his life and teachings. Start off with this statement. That in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 2. Volume 2, chapter 7. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes, summarizes some of the teachings of Ramanujacharya. And he describes here that to understand that Brahman is conscious is not sufficient. One must know how he consciously acts through his different energies. So, the defect of the Mayavadi philosophy is that it simply informs us of the consciousness of the Absolute Truth, but does not give us information of how he acts with his consciousness. Now, generally, those who worship the Virata Rupa, many of them are impersonalists by nature, or their understanding is that the manifestation of the Virata Rupa form is a stepping stone understanding to gradually understanding the Absolute Truth who is impersonal. So when people try to understand the Virata Rupa, they're meditating upon the Lord for the sake of fixing their minds in meditation. So they meditate upon the Virata Rupa and they're thinking, this is very helpful for me to get into meditation, and gradually in that meditation I will gradually realize the Absolute Truth who is impersonal, and then we reject the Virata Rupa. But actually, what they do not understand is, because their understanding is that the Brahman is the Absolute Truth, the impersonal spiritual energy, which is opposite to the variety of material existence. But here, Ramanujacharya teaches us that, it's not sufficient to understand that Brahman is conscious. But how does Brahman act with his consciousness? That is, you know, teachings of Ramanujacharya. So, you know, the Sankhya philosophy or the impersonalists, that they consider that the absolute oneness, nothing exists anywhere except Brahman, which is formless, changeless, eternal, and devoid of all attributes. Therefore, the variety that we perceive in the material world is simply an illusion and does not in reality have any existence. Such a philosophy depicts the activities of a devotional relationship with God as illusory also. Ramanuja states that the conception of Brahman as indeterminate is meaningless. He also states that whatever comes from the absolute truth must also be truth. Therefore, the material universe is real. The illusion is to accept it as the all in all and not see God as its underlying basis. He recognized three primary categories which are eternally distinct from one another. So Ramanujacharya teaches us, so in order to combat this philosophy that everything is, that the Mayavadis say everything is one. So in order to help them, he says, yes, everything is one. But it is a qualified oneness. It has varieties. And so he describes that there are three primary categories which are eternally distinct from one another, in that they're all one, they're all part of the same one whole, but they're eternally distinct. He says, they're distinct from one another, but together they comprise a unity. Those three, the Lord, the Jiva, and the material energy. The Lord is changeless, but his energies can undergo transformations according to his will. So the Lord never transforms, but by his multifarious energies, many transformations can manifest according to his will. Therefore, there is oneness to all existence which rests upon Brahman, but this Brahman is qualified by variety. This is the meaning of Visistadvaita. Qualified oneness. Shankara contended that all religious duties are dependent upon a perception of variety and therefore ultimately illusory. That's what Shankara said. Ramanuja refuted this, stressing that devotion to God is the only true path to liberation. All religious duties should be seen as a means to increase one's devotion to God. They are never to be given up. The living entity is eternally the servant of God, even in the state of liberation. Individuality is not given up, only one's false sense of independence from God. So, here in this sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we are seeing what Ramanujacharya is teaching there. We are seeing how the Lord is utilizing his consciousness, through his consciousness, how he's utilizing his various energies. So, this is very very precisely stated here in the translation. It says that the gigantic form manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And further down. In the purport, he says, the Virata, the gigantic form exhibited by the Yogamaya internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So again, that conscious Brahman or Bhagavan, we see that that is the real teaching of the Vedas, that actually Brahman or the Supreme One Consciousness, which pervades everything, which everything rests upon, that Brahman, that conscious Brahman, the personality of Godhead, has many different energies which are eternally distinct from each other, and those energies transform in such a way as to manifest all the varieties of spiritual and material creation. And this here is an example of that. So very, very, you know, deep. I thought I'd just touch on that just to kick off, just to make sure everyone's awake. But, you know, it's a very deep philosophy. We're actually very indebted to these great personalities. You know, we shouldn't be like the frog. Here it describes that there's a frog in the well, and his well was about 3 cubic feet, you know, which is not very large. 3 cubic feet, probably about really the width of this sun sort of thing here. And a frog from the Pacific Ocean, could have been any ocean, but because Prabhupada likes to use the Pacific, because I think that's the one he crossed to get to the USA. He, from the Pacific Ocean, he ended up popping into this well. And the frog, we used to do a play with this one. We used to get a balloon. You ever seen? I don't know, you get a balloon, you put it under your shirt, and you have a little pump. And as as the frog is saying, you know, how big is the ocean? Is it this big? And you know, you're secretly pumping up in the balloon, so it pumps up like that. But and then you sort of you pop it with a pin, you know, like that. So we used to do that play. And there's a song. You heard the song? There's a song. A devotee wrote a song about this. Very nice song. I've got it on tape. So sometimes we used to play the song, and then we'd sort of mime the play. But so this frog is trying to measure something which is not possible for him to measure, and therefore instead of taking advantage of the knowledge of the frog from the Pacific Ocean, he's almost disregarding, disbelief, a bit cynical, certainly not appreciative. You wouldn't say he was appreciative. But actually, we should, rather than be like the frog, we should be appreciative. Now, one may say, we're in the disciplic succession from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so you know, we follow his teachings, you know, so what do we need Ramanujacharya and you know, these various acharyas for? But actually, you know, these acharyas, their teachings, they appear before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, the principal gurus of the four bona fide sampradayas coming from the Lord. They appeared to create the framework for understanding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, which is very, very exalted. That section I just wrote there, read there, that was from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. As a purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're trying to understand the highest philosophy, PhD. A very, very advanced philosophy, which never been taught even by any other incarnation, not even by Krishna. Very, very exalted philosophy. And in order to understand some aspects of these philosophies, Srila Prabhupada inserts in his purports some of these teachings of these various acharyas, because they form the groundwork, the foundation by which we can understand, keep up with that philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, otherwise we cannot. Give an example. When I was in secondary school, so yes, I went to school, but mostly for social life, and wasn't really interested in study. And I went there because it was a good social life, and my brother went there. But so I never really took an interest. I never really took much interest in studies. And consequently, I got to about the third year of secondary school, where you sort of, really have to have been listening over the last 9 years or so in order to be able to keep up. And of course, I hadn't been listening. I'd just been in the back of the classroom playing and carrying on at that, having a good old time. So we were doing mathematics and I was failing. I had no idea, I think in year two, they had a whole conversation as to whether I would stay down because, I literally, and they said, we'll put him in year three. And I thought, thank goodness for that, because my brother had stayed down, so we spent year three together, so that was a bit of fun. But anyway, I was really, really struggling and failing in mathematics and a few other subjects which I just wasn't paying attention to. And I had this teacher, Mr. Sharp. I still remember his name. Mr. Sharp. Sounds like a cartoon, doesn't it? It's a good name for a math teacher. You get these doctors like Dr. Payne, you sort of don't quite trust him, but. Mr. Sharp, I trusted. Sharp as paint. So, what he did was, I found that I started to understand mathematics because what he did was he assumed, rightly so, and this was Broad Meadows High School, that most of his students probably hadn't been listening to the previous years and that they really didn't understand the fundamentals and the previous lessons. So whenever he taught anything, he always went right back to the very beginning. And everything that I've missed in all the previous years, he went through that and then taught us that lesson. That year I got an A. And from that time on, I was always an A student. And of course, very, very important because, especially because, later in life I took up astrology and according to Parasaramuni, if you don't understand the mathematics of astrology, you can't actually be a properly qualified astrologer. Because a lot of the, these days, quite often people just get a computer, they'll get themselves an astrological program, and then whatever the computer spits out, they'll, present to their clients. But actually, I've had a few programs. Usually, I'll go right through a program and I'll see all the mistakes, the computing problems, the mathematical problems, not all of them, but a lot of them. And then I'll work out, well, this computer is creating this mistake, it's doing this wrong, it's doing that wrong, and this doesn't make sense, you know. Because when you understand the mathematics, you know, certain things just come down to common sense. Well, that could be right, you know. There's only 360 degrees in a circle, so how can it be, you know. So I remember one time when I was in, as a devotee, I wanted to go back and do a computing business certificate. And again, because I never finished high school, I got up to year five and left, travelled around Australia, hitchhiked. But I applied for this course, but you had to actually have secondary school, you know, year six, VCE, to get in. And they said, well, you're not qualified. And I said, well, you know, it was about 300 applicants and they were choosing 80. They said, we'll give you a chance, we'll do an IQ test. So the IQ test, as you know, is a lot of it, there's a whole lot of mathematical equations. And what you do, you've got enough time to look at it and basically say whether it's correct or not. You don't have enough time to calculate it. So you've literally got to be able to perceive that something just fundamentally isn't right, like that. So, fortunately, I did so well in that you know, they put me in. I ended up doing the computing business certificate. But with astrology, with the computers, it's like that. That sometimes a computer just spits out some information, and if you have a good basic understanding of mathematics, you can just say, well, that can't be right. It just couldn't be right. It just doesn't make sense. It just, you know, it's not logical like that. So, you know, therefore, Paracelsus says that. So, similarly, so this, the point being that the teacher was wonderful, not because he taught a high standard of mathematics, but because he helped me to understand the foundations of mathematics. That's what made him the best teacher I ever had. See? So these acharyas like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, we may say, oh, Lord Chaitanya's teaching the highest. But if we don't understand the foundation, understanding, it has very little value to us, that teacher. You still have no entrance. So, you know, these great acharyas, you know, that even came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're extremely valuable to us because of the groundwork understanding. And also, you know, their teachings, they also, you know, they... Prabhupada mentions in one purport that these acharyas, they are the, they're like protectors of the path of pure devotion. So they're not just, you know, teaching and, you know, giving the framework for the very elevated understanding that Lord Chaitanya would later give, but they're protecting the path of devotional service. They're fighting for that. Many of these acharyas, Ramanujacharya, I think they tried to, you know, someone tried to kill him, there was a plan to kill him. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there was a plan to kill him. You know, many different personalities. Arjun, everyone wanted to kill him. You know, they fought for Krishna consciousness. And we also owe them, you know, that appreciation. Just like, you know, when we look back at the beginnings of the Hare Krishna movement, you know, sometimes you hear the stories about the devotees associating with Srila Prabhupada in the beginning days. Some of their realizations, you know, weren't very, very elevated. You know, their understanding wasn't. But they their activities allow us to perform the activities we're performing today. Just like, you know, pretty much the first Sankirtan party. You know, Prabhupada one day said, you know, to, I think it was 2nd Avenue, oh, today we're going out on Harinam Sankirtan. You know, so he was asking the devotees, you know, in the temple to go out and do Sankirtan on the streets. You know, many of them weren't quite comfortable with that. You know, in those days, you know, I think there was a donut shop down the road where, you know, they'd go and spend some time with Prabhupada, then they'd go down to the donut shop and they'd have a cigarette and some coffee and some donuts. You know, one day Prabhupada walked past and saw them and said, "What is this? What is this place?" "It was a donut shop." He said, "No, this is a do not shop." But you know, you see on the videos, you know, that they have the devotees going out on one of the first kirtans. You know, they've got the big bass drum. You know, they're wearing these sort of sheets that are somehow fashioned around them, not quite, you know. And you know, they got some of the long hair, beards, and you know, like this. They were very, very apprehensive of going out on the streets. Even, you know, they liked Prabhupada, they had faith in Prabhupada, but it was a big thing for them to go out on the street and do Harinam Kirtan, you know. But they did it, you know. And now, of course, you know, if the devotees don't go out on Harinam Kirtan, it's like, you know, where are you guys? You know, haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. Is something wrong? Like that. It's a part of life in most places in the world. Even here, I still remember that, you know, the early days in Harinam Sankirtan in Melbourne. You know, it's just a lot of opposition, a lot of disbelief, and a lot of harassment. But you know, some devotees had to be thrown in jail. And then, you know, some protest, I think Cornwall was thrown in jail, was that probably for Harinam Kirtan or something. And, you know, he did a hunger fast and, you know, like that. I can tell you a funny story about that. Maybe not tell you too many stories, but anyway, you know, these, some of the devotees, they're, you know, just like when Prabhupada went to Russia, you know, he met Ivan, I think it was. He initiated him that day. It was like the first time he ever met him. You know, and then he left. And what was his understanding, you know, as he was preaching Krishna consciousness in Russia? After meeting Prabhupada once. But look at Russia now. It's one of the biggest yatras in the world, right? So it's not just that we appreciate, you know, devotees or even acharyas, or, you know, or reject them or don't appreciate them because... Oh, no, we have Lord Chaitanya, you know. We have Lord Chaitanya. We don't need to, you know, worry about others like that. So, you know, that appreciation should be there. And of course, you see here, there's a nice purport here by Srila Prabhupada. It says that... one of the most essential verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or essential sections. So, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text Number 19. Real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although fully situated in the mode of goodness, even the great rishis who occupy the topmost planets cannot ascertain the real religious principles, nor can the demigods or the leaders of Siddhaloka, to say nothing of the asuras, ordinary human beings, vidyadharas and charanas. Then these verses 6, 3, 20 to 21. Lord Brahma, Bhagavan Narad, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, Svayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janaka Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami, and I myself know the real religious principles. So that would be Yamaraj speaking. My dear servants, this transcendental religious principle, which is known as Bhagavat Dham, or surrender unto the Supreme Lord and love for Him, is uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. It is very confidential and difficult for ordinary human beings to understand. But if by chance one fortunately understands it, he is immediately liberated, and thus he returns home back to Godhead. So then, Prabhupada's purport, it's not a long purport, but it's very, very significant. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna refers to Bhagavad Dham as the most confidential religious principle. Sarva guyatamam guyat guyataram. Krishna says to Arjuna, because you are my very dear friend, I am explaining to you the most confidential religion. Sarvadamam parikyagya malmikam saranam braja. Give up all other duties and surrender unto me. So Srila Prabhupada says, one may ask, if this principle is very rarely understood, what is the use of it? In answer, Yamaraj states herein that this religious principle is understandable if one follows the parampara system of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, and the other standard authorities. There are four lines of disciplic succession, one from Lord Brahma, one from Lord Shiva, one from Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, and one from the Kumaras. The disciplic succession from Lord Brahma is called Brahma Sampradaya. The succession from Lord Shiva, Shambhu, is called Rudra Sampradaya. The one from the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Ji, is called the Sri Sampradaya. And the one from the Kumaras is called the Kumara Sampradaya. One must take shelter of one of these four Sampradayas in order to understand the most confidential religious system. In the Padma Purana it is said, Sampradaya vihina ye mantraste nispriya mataha. If one does not follow the four recognized disciplic successions, his mantra or initiation is useless. In the present day there are many upasampradayas. Or sampradayas which are not bona fide. They have no link to authorities like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the Kumaras or Lakshmi. People are misguided by such sampradayas. The sastras say that being initiated in such a sampradaya is a useless waste of time, for it will never enable one to understand the real religious principles. And then the next verse, as to the process of surrender, devotional service, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. Very, very essential instructions about religion. Religion means surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with love, as Krishna said, and that process of surrender begins with the chanting of the Harinam Kirtan, the holy name of the Lord. So we'll come back to that point. Now, again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, says a Vaishnava should study the commentaries of the Vedanta Sutra written by the four Sampradaya Acharyas, namely Sri Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, and Nimbarka. For these commentaries are based upon the philosophy that the Lord is the Master and that all living entities are His eternal servants. One interested in studying Vedanta philosophy properly must study these commentaries, especially if he is a Vaishnava. These commentaries are always adored by Vaishnavas. So, you know, the Prabhupada is, you know, encouraging Vaishnavas, especially those who want to establish the essential teachings of the Vedanta Sutra, that they should understand, they should understand the arguments and the commentaries, as we started this class off with, by these acharyas, such as Ramanujacharya. Not that, you know, they're to be rejected or minimized. So, actually, as Prabhupada describes here, that in this Kali Yuga, there are many upper sampradayas. Means they have no, they're not following any of these bona fide sampradayas, which are authorized by Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Narayan. They just, you know, someone just pops up out of nowhere and decides that they are, you know, a guru and that they can make a lot of money. And they want to travel the world and have nice big cars. And they teach a process which is completely bogus. And again, you know, this, for instance, I think it was, Maharishi or Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, TM, was that TM? I saw a documentary once, you know, how they... he gives them all a mantra. He said that he gave them all an individual mantra. You know, he said that even on a television, you know, documentary. But actually, you know, one time a lot of them got together when they, you know, they're not supposed to tell their mantra to anyone else. But you know, when they spoke, then what's your mantra? You know, mine's on Shiva. But most of them had the same mantras, even though they thought. And one of the processes that they did, I saw this on television, was that they used to have their meditation room. They have all these mats, sort of like yoga mats, cushioned. And what they do, they sit in a lotus position, they chant their mantra, and they bounce. They're sitting in a, and they try and levitate. You know, so you see there's about 30, 40 people, they're all in the room, and they're bouncing up, you know, sitting like this in a yoga position, bouncing up and down, chanting their mantra, and practicing levitation, like that. You know, because they believe that gradually by this mantra that, you know, one day they'll just, if they keep doing like that, they'll start floating, you know, develop these mystic cities. So, again, you know, how we should appreciate even the early devotees who may not, you know, many of them may not have had much realization, but if it wasn't for them getting out on the street and, you know, having the courage to, you know, do the Harinam Kirtan and distribute the books and to challenge people and to preach Krishna consciousness, instead of us being here in the room here in Srimad Bhagavatam, we'd all be bouncing up and down on mats, trying to levitate. We wouldn't know any different. We wouldn't know any better like that. We'd have no idea. So, these here, now, Yamaraj mentioned that devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle of the living entity in human society. So, this principle is ultimately what we are learning by hearing about the Virata Rupa. How is it we're studying the Virata Rupa, and that is going to lead us to understand that we should be chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as the ultimate religious principles? That is the way the Bhagavatam is going. That is, the Bhagavatam is moving us in that direction. Now, there's a verse in the 11th canto. I'll try to find it before. I'll try and find it again. Sorry, the 11th chapter. Arjun says, so after, this universal form, it is actually described by Vishnu Chakravarti Paul in his commentary. This universal form has the nature of time and karma. Time and karma. And Prabhupada says also he says Deva Karma Atma Rupina, he translates that as of the gigantic form of transcendental work, time and nature. And when Arjuna asks Krishna, asks the universal form, you know, who are you? Who are you? I am time, the great destroyer of the world. Shishamara, you know, when we chant the names of Lord Narasimhadeva, one of his names is Shishamara. Shishamara, of course, means like a fish or a dolphin. Shishamara is actually if you're up above the universe and you're looking down, you see that the shape of the stars and the planets, you know, circumambulating the pole star, and the shape like a dolphin. It's called the Shishamara Chakra. And that Shishamara Chakra, or the form of the planets and the sun, the rotation, that is time. It is the movements of the planets and the sun and that rotation which forms universal time. So literally the universe itself is the clock, the time. Just like, you know, we look at the clock, it represents time because, you know, the hands are moving in certain, you know, when that big hand gets to the top, it's something o'clock. So when the universe, you know, the planets move in certain, they reach certain points, it manifests different progressions of time, the universal time. Therefore, the universe itself is, you know, universal time altogether. Therefore, it's called Shishamara. Arjuna asks, who are you? I am time, the all-devouring, you know, time destroying everything in this world, except for the devotees, the pandavas, you know, like that. And upon understanding that Krishna, by his yogamaya potency, was able to display to Arjuna this inconceivable universal form, Arjuna offered praise to Krishna. And he said, everyone becomes joyful by chanting your holy names. This was his realization. That after becoming more aware of how you use your mystical potencies even to manifest this universal form, then I appreciate your personal form more and more. And more I want to chant your holy names, and more I understand why everyone in the universe wants to chant your holy names like this. So as a result of understanding the universal form, we should come to the conclusion how the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Conscious, is a conscious person who can utilize the potencies of Brahman to manifest all varieties of spiritual and material creation, and therefore that Supreme Conscious Being is the one we actually offer worship to, respect, love and devotion, which we see in the Bhagavad Gita is revealed to us as being Krishna. So this aspect is very, very difficult to understand, actually, in the Chaitanya, but it's important to understand because many people, you know, in their upper sampradayas and their false gurus, they are meditating on the wrong thing. Some are following, you know, there are many followers of Paramahamsa Yogananda who are meditating upon the universal form itself. But here, you know, Prabhupada is describing in this purport, and Sukadeva Goswami is describing that, you know, you cannot, you know, don't waste your time trying to understand the glories of the universal form. It is unlimited. But understand this. Understand this. It is just one sample of how the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests his inconceivable potencies. Understand that. Don't waste your time any further and take up the chanting of the holy name. So the incarnation in Kali Yuga is not the Virata Rupa or this one or that one. Actually, the incarnation of Kali Yuga is the holy name of the Lord. That is described also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the holy name of the Lord is even more difficult to understand than the Virata Rupa, more difficult to understand than the various, many of the various incarnations. Very difficult to understand the incarnation in Kali Yuga as the holy name. You know, people, oh, who is the avatar of Kali Yuga? Sound, there's a sound. You know, people can't conceive of that. You know, if we, even the avatars, such as, you know, people may understand, or Macha, oh yes, this avatar, he came to protect the Vedas. Okay, yes, yeah, very, very important. Or Varaha, you know, he came to deliver the earth, yes. Like that. Lord Nrisimhadev, even more difficult to understand. He came to protect one devotee, Prahlad. Buddha, he appeared to protect the Vedas from misuse, from corruption. But the holy name of the Lord is very difficult to understand. And what is the purpose? What is it? What is the actual, you know, portfolio of the holy name of the Lord? And that is also described. It's actually the same purpose for all the manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as described in the Bhagavad Gita. Parichanaya sadhanam binisha chaduskutam dhanava samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. And actually, if you look at the various so-called avatars and so-called Shaktivesh avatars, you know, many of them are actually propagating irreligious principles. None of them can really stop irreligion. None of them can actually even know what religion is, let alone re-establish it. You know, amongst all the false gurus of the world, none of them are teaching you surrender unto Krishna. Don't sit here listening to my nonsense. You go and get a Bhagavad Gita from the Hare Krishna movement, you surrender, but in the process of surrender. That's the last thing they want to tell you. In fact, they'll tell you that that's the last thing you should be doing. As Ramanujacharya says, he says that the Mayavadis, they think that these devotional activities, because they're activities, they're part of variety. You know, Brahman is formless. It's without differentiation. It's without variety. It's without activity. Therefore, if you're doing activity, it's part of this material manifestation. So, but we can take it, of course, that we see that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is being chanted all over the world, and those who take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra properly, strive very, very hard to give up intoxications and illicit sex and meat eating and gambling, and they gradually develop their love for Krishna, where practically their whole life is devoted to helping people to understand the glories of Krishna's incarnation in this Kali Yuga as the Nama Avatar. So we should be very, very careful of the upper sampradayas and not listen to their nonsense. One time there was, way back in the early days, there was one bogus guru, and he was teaching that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And ultimately you can all become God. And one of the devotees went along to his meetings and challenged him. If you're God, can you lift up Govardhan Hill? And he replied, yes, I can. Well, show me. I just did it. Did you see? No. That's because I haven't given you the divine eyes. and the followers are all, So there's so many people, being tricked very easily, actually. We should, take shelter of these. We're so fortunate to have so many teachers, acharyas, who teach the philosophy from the fundamentals to the most elevated principle. And wherever we have a lack of, wherever we, need to gain some, assistance, you can find we have so many great personalities who are elaborating that aspect of our great philosophy, so wonderfully. So, we are very, very fortunate, and we should take advantage of, these acharyas as required for our devotional advancement, help other people to be protected from all the rogues and rascals that are, not following anything, just following some nonsense. Ultimately understand that the ultimate religious principle is to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited transcendental potencies which manifest all material and spiritual creation. And the main process of worshipping Krishna is to chant the holy names of the Lord. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Do you want to add something more about Ananda Chagrin?
Something more?
Ananda
Chagrin. I'll get more. If you could tell. I'll read this, just to conclude. All right? A little bit of neck about his notes are all over the place. Just a little concluding. Okay. This one here is from the Navadvipa Mahima. Once, while Ramanujacharya was staying in Jagannath Puri, he offered his prayers to Lord Jagannath, who became very pleased. Lord Jagannath appeared before Ramanuja and said, "Ramanuja, go and visit Sri Navadvip, for very soon I shall appear there in the house of Jagannath Misra. Sri Navadvip is my most beloved abode and is a part of the spiritual sky manifested in this world. As my eternal servant and a leader amongst my devotees, you should go there. Let your students stay here, for they are absorbed in dasyaras, servitorship in awe and reverence, and will not understand the advanced devotional mood, so travel there alone. Any living entity who does not go see Sri Navadvip has been born uselessly. Just one portion of Sri Navadvip contains Rangakshetra, Vyankateswara, and Yadava Achala. Therefore, go to Sri Navadvip and see my form of Gauranga. After gaining the Lord's blessings, go to Kormastana and rejoin your disciples." Folding his hands, Ramanuja requested Lord Jagannath, "My dear Lord, you have mercifully told me something about Gauranga, but actually, who is he? I do not know." The Lord answered, "It is known to you that Lord Sri Krishna, the Lord of Golok, is the Supreme Absolute Truth. That much is well known to my devotees. The same Supreme Personality of Godhead who resides in Sri Vrindavan Dham is fully manifested as Gauranga and his beloved abode. Sri Vrindavan is manifested as the holy land of Sri Navadvip Dham. Navadvip is the supreme spiritual abode and it is transcendental to the mundane material nature. In that divine land, Lord Gauranga eternally resides. By my mercy, that holy abode has come to exist within this universe, but it remains completely unaffected by Maya. This is the verdict of the scriptures. If anyone thinks that Sri Navadvip is only a material location, then whatever devotion he has developed will wither and perish. By my will, my inconceivable energy preserves this transcendental abode within this material world. Simply by studying the scriptures, one will not be able to understand the absolute truth. Only by my mercy can my devotees understand." Hearing these words of Lord Jagannath, Ramanuja was filled with love. "My dear Lord," he said, "your pastimes are truly astounding. The scriptures cannot fully describe your opulences. Why is Gaura Leela not described in the scriptures? Upon reflection, I find some hint of Gauranga Tattva in the Shrutis and Puranas. Now, however, all my doubts are gone and I am ready to execute your desire. I will go to Sri Navadvip and from there I will set out to preach about Lord Gauranga throughout the three worlds, giving evidences from the scriptures to all, converting them to the devotional service of Gauranga. Please instruct me, you have just to give me your order." Lord Jagannath replied, "Ramanuja, do not broadcast in this way. Keep these secrets of Lord Gauranga's pastimes as they are for the present time. Only after he has concluded his pastimes will the people in general come to understand them. Preach about me on the level..." "Preach on me on the level of dasyaras as you have always done, but within your heart, worship Lord Gauranga constantly." Following Lord Jagannath's order, Ramanuja secretly cultivated his attraction for Sri Navadvip. Being very merciful, Lord Narayan led him to Vaikunthapura and showed him his transcendental form, worshipped by manifestations of his different energies. Ramanuja felt himself most fortunate to see this, but as he watched, the Lord manifested his form as Gauranga, the son of Jagannath Misra. Ramanuja's mind became stunned by the brilliance of his golden form. Lord Gauranga then placed his two lotus feet on Ramanuja's head, and Ramanuja, filled with inspiration, began to offer prayers. Ramanuja said, "I must see your pastimes when you appear here in Navadvipa, my lord. I shall never leave this place." Lord Gauranga replied, "Your wish will be fulfilled, O son of Kesava. When my Navadvipa Leela is revealed, you will again take your birth here." Lord Gauranga disappeared. Greatly satisfied by the Lord's promise, Ramanuja returned to Kormistan, where he joined his disciples. During his life, he preached devotional service to the Lord in the mood of Dasya Ras throughout the south of India, whilst internally he was absorbed in meditating on the pastimes of Lord Gauranga. By Lord Gauranga's mercy, he was born again in Sri Navadvipa as a devotee named Ananta to assist in the Lord's pastimes. When Lord Gauranga made his appearance in Sri Navadvipa, Ananta Vipra was already quite old. He lived in a cottage which was situated beneath a huge old banyan tree. There, within his humble abode, he would worship the deities of Lakshmi Narayan. None could describe the pure way in which he worshipped them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Ramanuja Charya ki jai. Sri Ananta Vipra ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.